Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 4th of Iyar. With thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, David Hachhauser, for their help in putting the shiurim online. Today we're going to see a tshuva of Moshe Feinstein's, which is about vinegar made in France. But the problem with the vinegar, as we're going to see, is the containers that they used to make the alcohol that eventually went to the vinegar. So this is from Shut Igrot Moshe, this is from Yoredeya, the second volume in which time we discuss Yoredeya part bet. Responsum lamed vav simon lamed vav. It's pidvar alcohol shenaseh bekelim shasush alcohol miyayin veasu chomet masheravu mi alcohol zeh chamisha achuzim. So we'll get back to that in a second. I'll just translate it. It's, you want to know about alcohol that was made in containers, let's say casks, but made in containers where they had previously made alcohol from wine, or they had contained alcohol of wine that belonged to non-Jews, and now they've taken this alcohol, this new alcohol, which is not made for wine for non-Jews, but it's alcohol that was made in these containers, and they made a vinegar out of it, and the alcohol is 5% of the vinegar. So 5% is more than 1 in 60, which is often the standard in halakha for saying that something doesn't provide taste. So this is from the 4th of Iyar of Tavshin Chav Bet in 1962. He's writing to the assistant chief rabbi of Strasbourg, France. Now today, according to one online website that I found, there are 16,000 Jews in Strasbourg in France, but at its peak, Wikipedia says the Alsace community numbered 35,000 people. So maybe they always had an assistant chief rabbi. In any case, the assistant chief rabbi of Strasbourg, France, has written to Moshe Feinstein. He wants to know about this alcohol. It's made in the same containers as they make alcohol from wine. They take wine and they want to reduce it to its alcohol. So then that alcohol would have a problem of stam yin, would have a problem of that we halakhically hold that wine that has been even just touched by non-Jews or handled by non-Jews or owned by non-Jews, right? Handled by non-Jews. So we worry halakhically that we're not allowed to use it. This has probably two components to it. One is the question of whether they might have used it for some inappropriate purposes, for avodah zara purposes. And the other being a problem of the Chazal didn't want us mixing with non-Jews too freely, and therefore they said that if we can't share wine together, that will put enough of a barrier to prevent things like intermarriage or us learning too much from them about their way of living, and God forbid, Jews deciding that that's a good way for them to live. So in any case, it's tam yinam, that's the problem. Now, I think part of what drew me to this question was, it's really a question about alcohol and about vinegar, but many, many years ago, when I was starting out in the rabbinate, somebody was complaining to me about how hard it was to get, and he was talking about not wine, but some other alcoholic beverage, how hard it was to get with a hechsher because of the problem of these casks, containers, that if you have a later wine or a later alcohol or a later vinegar that's made in the containers that used to contain wine that was stam yedom, that is owned by non-Jews, that has been handled by non-Jews, and therefore is usher for Jews to drink from. So that problem, this person says to me, in all honesty, he thought was the most serious problem facing the Jewish community at the time. And I remember that I thought he was kidding, because I couldn't imagine anybody really think the question of wine or vinegar or whatever it was could be the most important question at the time. But I managed to hold myself back. But that's why when I saw this tshuva now in the context of our response of a day project, I was drawn to it, especially since in the discussion where Moshe Feinstein is going to review for us some of the central issues that come up in kashrus questions in general. So it would be a good chance for us to either, if we've never heard it before, learn about it, or if we've heard it before, to review it and remind ourselves that these come up in considering all sorts of kashrus questions. So 5% Moshe points out is 1 in 20 is the alcohol. So we'll come back to those numbers and see whether that matters. And the question is whether you can say that the vinegar could be kosher for Jews in France because they don't have another way of getting vinegar. In his presentation, right, there's always a question of what is apostle and not apostle. His presentation, this is where you can get vinegar in France that Jews could use. If Moshe Paskins, that they can't use this vinegar because it's been made in containers that previously contained alcohol from stam yinam, from wine handled by non-Jews, then you're going to have a problem with vinegars. So now he gets to the answer. He gets to the beginnings of his answer. So the Tosfos and the Rosh in Chulin Daf Kuf wrote that to the Rabbeinu Ephraim, we don't say chaticha naaseh nevela bishar isurim. So, kashrus principle number one is something called chaticha naaseh nevela. Chaticha naaseh nevela is the following question. Let's suppose, and I think milk and meat is where it's clear that there are those who hold chaticha naaseh nevela. Let's suppose I mix milk and meat, I cook them together, Right, this is the way you make pasur b'chalam. I cook them together, so now I have, let's say, a steak over which I poured a huge amount of milk, and you know, I cooked it in a pot of milk for whatever reason, or you know, with butter all over it. So now it's pasur b'chalam. It's milk and meat together. This is actually milk and meat together. Now let's suppose that it mixes with other items in such a way that it makes them prohibited. Let's say this piece of meat or stew or whatever, or this piece of meat or steak or whatever, falls into a mixture of other meats, and there's it's a stew, so there's a sauce that will transfer the taste from one to the other, and it got all mixed together. I don't know where the original was. It doesn't matter because it got more than enough taste. It's not 60 pieces of meat. It's, you know, 20 pieces of meat. So now I have to assume that all those pieces are not kosher. That's simple. Chatecha Nas in the Velim tells me not only are they not kosher in the sense that I'm not allowed to eat them, but let's say all these 20 pieces fell into a mixture of 100 other pieces of meat. So now here's the question. If my original piece of meat that fell in was only 1 in 20, and the new mixture where the 20 fell into, you know, 80 more, it's only 1 out of 100, so it should be batel. And after all, the original ta'am, the original taste of basar b'chalav that had been created was only the taste of that one piece, of that original one piece. So there's a perfectly plausible argument to be said that if that mixture, the whole mixture, then falls into another one, the 60 to 1 ratio we should want or hope for in terms of saying we can ignore it is about the amount of taste that was there. So Chatecha Nas in the Velim is the ritual that says to us, no, it's not true. Because what happens is that all the new pieces of meat, once they absorb all the middle group of meat, when it fell from the one piece of meat, fell into a mixture with 20 other, with 19 others, those 19, not only did they become prohibited, right, but that all of their taste now became a basar b'chalav taste. Not just that they contain within them enough basar b'chalav taste that they can't be eaten, but they all become, that's Chatecha Nas Satan Nevela, it all becomes that way. Another example, if we say it about other Isurim, that's what Rabbi Ephraim is going to claim, but let's say we said it about, you know, about bugs, right, about sheket. So let's say shratzim. So let's say a sheret falls into a mixture and it is less than 1 in 60 or it's a beer, whatever it is, and it creates ta'am. And so that nui fell into a souffle. So now that whole souffle becomes considered sheretz. So if it falls into something else, it will all of it be a problem. That's Chatecha Nas in the Vela. So there's debate about, there's debate about whether we ever say Chatecha Nas in the Vela, but Rabbi Ephraim tells us held that not only do we say it, which is what we all hold as well, but we say it, but he held, we only say it about, I think, basar b'chalav, but only the prohibition of basar b'chalav. So he holds we don't say it about other things. So that would mean, therefore, for our vinegar case, that would be very helpful because we could say that the casks only became as filled with problematic wine as they became filled with, but that the whole cask itself doesn't become prohibited, and that'll help us with our calculations. It's very Ben Ephraim. That was what explained Psukim in the Torah when the Jews come back from making war with Midian. So that's where they learn the requirement of Hagalat Kelim. There's a whole story there. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't say anything, and then Elazar steps in to explain the laws of Hagalat Kelim that you have to, if it's a pot that you usually use with water and stuff like that, then you have to boil water in it. That's the way you get out whatever prohibited items have been included in it. If it's something that's only used over a straight fire, so then you'd have to burn it out. But if for the kinds of pots and pans, which are most probably, that you can do it by boiling water in them, you can do hagalah. So there's an interesting question because, so the problem that Rabbi Ephraim's view would help us with is that, well, let's see. I took spoiled plunders, a big pot. The non-Jews had cooked in, the Midianites had cooked in it, whatever they cooked in it. Now I'm going to do Hagalah. I'm going to put water in it. I'm going to fill it up with water, and we'll do Hagalah, which is fine. Except that when I do Hagalah, what we assume is happening is that the boiling water is drawing out whatever taste of prohibited items was absorbed into the walls of this pot, and then we think we're going to pour it out. And we generally assume, as it happens, that while it's boiling it out, it can't reabsorb it. But Rabbi Ephraim's view would be, well, let's say some of it got reabsorbed at some point. So ordinarily, you might say to yourself, well, but it became batel in the water. So that's true about the belia itself, the items that have been absorbed themselves, there we're pretty confident that they're much less than the amount that's in the amount of water that's boiling in the pot. But if we say chatichanas is nevela, that's going to be more of a problem, as we'll see in a second, because the Ramah, in fact, says, no, we say chatichanas nevela by all prohibitions. So then we have a problem, because when we make the new alcohol, in our case for the vinegar, so the alcohol they made for the vinegar was apparently beet alcohol. They made it from silka. Yeah, so the beet alcohol is the good alcohol, that has no problem with it. And we don't assume there was 60 of that compared to the alcohol that is going to be gotten out of the walls when you're containing in it. And therefore, it should all become a nevela. It should all become a problem, prohibited. And therefore, it would seem like all of the alcohol in the vinegar is going to be prohibited. In other words, so here's where we are. If you hold chatichanas in nevela doesn't apply to stam yenam, then, which is what Rabbeinu Ephraim had said, and that was the way he understood that you could clean, you could make pots kosher by boiling them out, because whatever comes out into the water is going to be batel, because we'll assume that it's less than 60 and it'll be batel. But I think the worry was, well, let's say some of it managed to escape back into the walls, to be reabsorbed in the walls, and then it would be nasis tevela, would have been, especially if you had to conserve. I think his worry is, if you held chatichanas in the vela, then as soon as it went into the water that went into it, would become the vela, and would go back into the walls, it would be a problem. So he holds, it's not nasis tevela, but in our case, which is the more important case for us, when I have this alcohol, if it's 5% of the vinegar, now, if I could have held that the beet alcohol that I put in these containers to make it there isn't 60 times the bad alcohol that's already contained in the wine, but it's not turned into the veil itself, that would have been better for me, because then out of the 5% alcohol, it's not all 5% that's a problem, it's much less than that. It's only whatever amount happened to come out of the walls of the container, and that would probably be batel b'shishi, that would probably be nullified by 60 times of it in the thing as a whole. But according to the Ramah, who rules that we say chatichanas in the vela, then when the bad alcohol mixes in with the beet alcohol, it would seem to make the beet alcohol also prohibited, because of chaticha nasit, kulo nasit nevela. It's all made into the thing, and then if we want to talk about once it's mixed in with the vinegar, to make vinegar with the other stuff, and it's only 5%, but 5% is a lot, because all of that 5% was nasit nevela, now thought of as prohibited items. So one first redeeming factor, one first mitigating factor, is that when it comes to liquids, the Ramah held that there are those who say, we don't say chatichanas nevela, and that you can, the Ramah said, rely on that if there's a matter of a hefzik gadol, if it's a great loss, and if it's shar isur, meaning it's not the basar b'chalav, where there was a more clear version, more clear idea that we have chatichanas nevela. Then the Shach says, I just checked because I was feeling bad, but I just think I was right. The Shulchan Aruch and Sadi Bet, if Dalit and Yeridea Paskins, Lo Amru Chaticha Atma Nasis Nevela, that they only said this whole idea that the piece itself becomes a full Nevela, becomes fully included in the prohibition. Ela Basar B'chalav, only about Basar B'chalav. And then there's also a question about in the Ramah as to where we do or don't apply this. So we're not talking about that today. We're talking about the Rav Moshe's answer. But we're just pointing out that the Ramah holds that when it comes to other prohibitions, not Basar B'chalav, if it's Lach B'lach, if it's liquid in liquid, so the difference in liquid and solid and solid is the liquid mixed much more fully together. So the Ramah held that for other Yisurim, in Lach B'Lach, we didn't have to hold Chaticha Atma Nasin Nevela. We can talk about that another time, if we have the opportunity, but it seems to be very, very briefly that you might argue, for example, that when it's Yavesh B'Yavesh, it's dry foods, it's solid materials, so then they each have their own identity. So if somehow each of them absorb taste, it's just an item. But when it's all mixed together, one big mixture, then it all becomes absorbed together. You don't have to say Chaticha Atma Nasin Nevela. Another time. Any case, the Shach holds in Kuf Gimel, Resif Katan Chaf, in paragraph 20 of 103, he says that, so that's Lach B'Lach idea. Lach B'Lach means liquid. He says that when you have prohibited items that are, the taste of them is absorbed in the walls of a container, and then they get pushed, that they get pulled out, he thinks you treat that as Lach B'Lach. That's an interesting question to think about, right? If you think about, for example, you can imagine, let's say, a steak that is right up against the walls of a container, and for some reason the steak is prohibited. Let's say it's a pork steak, right? It's ham, so it's prohibited. So now its taste gets absorbed into the walls, and then I cook something else in there, and it gets absorbed back out. So what is that? Right? I might have imagined that you'd have to treat it as yavesh, as dry, because it is the taste of a dry item. And in the case that I constructed, there was no liquid that brought the taste from one place to the other. It just went straight into it. It's a hard case to construct, and so that's probably why most of the time we think of this taste as being lach anyway. So the shach says in general, this taste can be thought of as lach bilach. If that's true, now in the case of alcohol, it's the taste of a liquid already anyway. So I easily could have imagined that I would have treated it as a lach. But the question of how you treat this ta'am, this taste that's absorbed in the walls, this ishtar, this prohibition that's absorbed in the walls, that's an interesting question the shach is raising. The shach says, no, you treat it as lach. You treat it as liquid. So if that's true, certainly in our alcohol case, it's a lach bilach situation. If it's a lach bilach, a liquid in a liquid situation, then we can apply this Ramah, who would say that when it comes to prohibitions other than milk and meat being mixed together, you can rely that in lach balach, we don't hold chaticha nasis devela. So if that's true, then in our situations, you're okay, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, because if you have a hefzi gadol, you have in this situation, it's really only one out of 160 because of the percentages that he's figuring for how much the actual original alcohol that was a problematic alcohol, the wine alcohol, gives off into the alcohol that's being made, so the eventual sum total is only 5% of the mixture, but I think he's claiming that only 1/8 of that was actually the original alcohol, and therefore, with the original stam yenem alcohol, and therefore, only that would be the problem, then 1 to 160, and we could say it's batel. Then you get into the question of whether there's enough of a hefsed here, right? So Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't want to have to be bothered by that question, right? Because the Ramah only said you can rely on this when there's a big hefsed, when there's a great loss. So you might argue that having a trouble getting a vinegar is a big loss, but you might argue not, and that was a whole big question. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, not sure we have to go that far to worry about whether there was a big loss, because when he says that in the case of hefsed merubah, of great loss, you can rely on it, in the case of lach bilach, what he's implying, Rav Moshe Feinstein understands it to mean, is that really, that according to his opinion, it's allowed, but if there's not a great loss there, we worry about those who hold that even lach b'lach, you have to say chaticha nasin nevela. But, and therefore, in Nisa d'Rabbanan, if that's what we're doing, meaning if we really hold this, but we're just being choshesh, so in case of just being choshesh, just having a worry, so there Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks that if it's a Nisa d'Rabbanan now, that's another level of leniency, because when Chazal created their halakot, they created them with certain leniencies that didn't apply to Torah law. That's why people often say the words, it's only a d'Rabbanan, and there's a good reason why they say that, because there's a halakhic meaning to that, which is what I just said. But you can get used to saying, well, as long as you're a bun, I don't care about it so much. But it doesn't mean that. What it means is that Chazal created these rules for various reasons, you know, to protect the Torah, and for various reasons they created the rules. In creating those rules, they inserted various leniencies as well. So these leniencies, one of them would be in this kind of a situation where you have an opinion that we really assume that we follow, which is that you don't really think that you have to worry about chaticha nasin nevela in lach bilach. So if there's a hefzed merubah, we don't want to be so stringent. So if that's true, then also in Issurim d'Rabbanan and rabbinic prohibitions, we can also say, even if it's not a hefzed, that is really the halacha. And stam yenam is a dis d'Rabbanan. The idea that we're not allowed to use wine touched by non-Jews is a rabbinic prohibition. So therefore, since it's a rabbinic, and this is lach b'lach, mixed liquid, being mixed with liquid, we don't have to worry about the chaticha nasin nevela problem. Therefore, we should be okay that the whatever alcohol taste came from the stam yenam, from the wine handled by non-Jews, is going to be mixed insufficiently that it's not a problem in this vinegar. So there's a complication with that, and I usually don't love getting into these complications because back and forths are, to me, very hard to transmit just by, you know, shir, by audio shiurim, but this one brings up a halachic question that I think is relevant and useful. So he points out the Prima Gadim in Simon Tzadi Bet and Sikot and Yiraf and the Mishpitzot Zahav points out that the Taz didn't feel like we could make it this way. The Pri Chadash was makel an iser d'rabbanan, that in a rabbinic prohibition, like stam yenem that we're talking about, a non-Jew handling wine, that we don't say chaticha nasin nevela. The Taz did not think that just being an iser d'rabbanan was enough of a reason to be makel, meaning the Taz would have required a hefzed merubah, a great loss, and then we would have to go back and say, well, is not being able to secure vinegar, or having to look elsewhere for vinegar, a great loss? That would have been a whole complicated question. So the Prima Gadim said we shouldn't rely on this Pri Chadash, because when the Pri Chadash is mekel, it was lenient, that's because the Pri Chadash held like the Shulchan Aruch. And as I mentioned just a minute ago when I looked it up for myself, the Shulchan Aruch paskin that we are mekel about all chaticha nasa nevela except for basa b'chol, except for meat and milk. But even within milk and meat, the Shulchan Aruch had paskin that kachal, which is basa b'chol, but it's only rabbanan. We don't say chaticha nasa nevela. Kachal is, I think, this. There's an udder inside the animal. Yeah, it's the udder inside the animal. And the problem is that it has milk in it, right? If you kill a cow, let's say, it has milk in it, in the kachal, so it looks like it's milk and meat together. So actually, halachically, it's not a problem, because that milk is not halachically real milk, as the Shulchan Aruch says in Yeredeya Tzadi, she'ein basar she'nid bashel b'chalav shchuta asur min haTorah, that the milk there is the milk that's drawn out of an animal after it was shechted, after it was slaughtered. That milk doesn't count halachically as full milk, and therefore, really, it's not basar b'chalav. So, in the case of chal, which is derabanan, the Shulchan Aruch had held that even since Rabbanan, even though it's Basar B'chalav, we don't say Chatich Nas Nidvela. The point of pointing that out is that, therefore, when the Pri Chadash says that Mekel is very lenient about when we do or don't say Chatich Nas Nidvela, it says that in other prohibitions, if they're Rabbanan, we don't have to even worry about a Hefta Meruva situation. It doesn't help us because we don't follow the Shulchan Aruch. We are Ashkenazim. We follow another perspective, the perspective that we do say Chatich Nas Nidvela, at least the Basar B'chalav, and therefore it might be that in Rabbanans, where we would say Chatich Nas Nidvela, we say Chatich Nas Nidvela. And also the Pri Chadash also quotes the Rambam, who held that even in Basar Of B'chalav, this is a Rabbanan form of milk and meat together, halachically at a Doraita level, there's a question in halacha, but we paskin the halacha, I'm sorry. Basar Of is definitely not a question, it's Kaya's question, never mind. But bird meat is not milk and meat together. So we paskin, we rule that it is at a Rabbanan level. That's why we can't have milk right after chicken or cook chicken in butter and things like that. That's a Rabbanan that we have to follow, which is fine. We have to follow it. But the Rambam held that since it's Rabbanan, the Rambam held that therefore if it got mixed into a mixture, you could add more to it. Like this happens in the Rabbanan. Let's say something gets prohibited at the Rabbanan level, and we could nullify it by adding more to the mixture. So in the Rabbanan, some of the Rabbanans at least, we're allowed to do. So in the Rambam held that was true. Let's say for however it happened, you know, a small piece of chicken fell into a milk soup that I have, and I don't want to lose the whole soup. I'm allowed to add more soup to nullify the taste of the chicken, right? Let's say that there's no actual chicken there where I got rid of it, but there's taste of the chicken, I can add more to the soup because it's the Rabbanan. But that can't be true if you hold chaticha atzmas nasa tzveila. If you say that the thing that got prohibited, it all becomes prohibited, there's no way to nullify because you can't over, you have to, you know, throw in a huge amount. And therefore, the Moshe is understanding, or the Prima Gadim is understanding, that the Prichadis is working on the opinion that we don't say chaticha nasa tzveila in those situations, whereas we Ashkenazim do. Because the Ramah, in fact, paskins that when it comes to chal, to the udder, if it fell into something else, we would say chaticha nasa tzveila. We would say that all of the new material that had absorbed enough prohibition to become prohibited itself, then all of it becomes prohibited, and the calculation has to address all of that prohibited item. And so too with chicken, in with basar oaf, with bird meat, with fowl meat, F-O-W-L meat in milk, you have that problem with chatech nas nevela. So if that's true, then when it comes to other derabbanans, we don't have this leniency and we'd have to follow the tas. However, says Ramosha, and the reason, so I brought it up first of all to remind us of the issues of chatech nas nevela. I also brought it up because I thought it's interesting to remember that Basar Of B'chalav is the Rabbanan prohibition. That is also interesting to note the whole question of the Rabbanans and how they counted halacha and what leniency they allow, including, for example, the possibility that at least some of the Rabbanans, if they become prohibited somehow, you might be allowed to actively put in more material to nullify it, which we're not all generally allowed to do with other prohibitions, with draw right to the prohibitions. But Ramosha Feinstein says, but maybe we don't have to follow the Prima Gadim. Maybe the Prima Gadim went too far, because maybe we can accept the leniencies of the Pri Chadash for a different reason, right? The reasons of the Pri Chadash, as the Prima Gadim pointed out, are that he held certain halakhic positions that we don't hold. So he had the right to hold them, but since we don't hold them, they're not relevant to us. But here's another way to see it, suggests Ramosha Feinstein. When we hold Chatich Nasas Nevela, when we, Ashkenazim, apply the rule that chaticha nasa nevela to lots and lots of prohibitions other than just basar b'chalav, and we say if an item absorbed prohibited materials, it all becomes prohibited, and that becomes the calculation for whether it's going to be then later on nullified. He says it's not clear to him that we do that because we've decided that that's the rule. We've decided to ignore the position of Rabbi Ephraim and the Rambam and the Rosh and lots of other Rishonim according to whom the Shulchan Aruch itself paskin, right? Is it that we've decided we reject those opinions? If that was what it decided, then we hold the halacha, we hold as an active legal position, the chaticha atz was nasa devela, that the item becomes prohibited in toto. But Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests, maybe that's not what we're doing at all. Because it's odd, he says, Shloyaz de bekoach acharonim levatil shitatam ulachria negdam. It's odd and hard to imagine that we felt comfortable that whoever came later to decide that no, we're going to worry about chaticha atzim is nasa tzavela, even in other prohibitions, felt it so strongly and so confidently they could completely ignore and nullify the previous thing. So that's an interesting question. Here, Rav Moshe Feinstein is taking this position. I'm not sure that if you were to look through all of his tshuvot, in fact, I highly doubt, if you look through all of his tshuvot, that he'd be sure of this thing. That he's suggesting that the way halacha works is when you have a group of Rishonim who hold a certain way, even if, and it's especially true of Ashkenazim, even if Ashkenazi halacha eventually decides to go the other, more stringent way, it's not a rejection of those opinions, it's a concern about this other opinion. Now, the reason that's important is because then it means that we're not deciding this way, we're being machmir this way. Once we're being machmir this way, it means that if situations arise where it would be vital and helpful to be mekel, we're allowed to be. So now he says maybe that's what's going on. Even though the Ran in the end of Kol HaBasar of Perek and Kulin brings you Yerushalmi and Orla to show that Rebbe held was an authoritative Tana, that we say chaticha atz tevela about other prohibitions, that doesn't prove that we're ignoring those earlier Rishonim who held that you can be matir, that you can be lenient about it. So therefore, it's a custom to be machmir about other prohibitions. It's misafik makloket atosvot in mayo. And because it's a tosvot, there are lots of tosvot, there are people who held like tosvot, who hold this way. So if you're going to say that all of Ashkenaz Kalach, it's going to leave you open to many, many, many leniencies. And I just don't remember seeing Rav Moshe Feinstein applying this before, but it's an interesting theory. When there's a machloket among a lot of Rishonim, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins one way, and the Ramah paskins another way, and the Ramah is paskin like the Ashkenazic practice, I would have said to myself, that's because the Ramah is following the Ashkenazic tradition, and he holds that's the tradition, that's the psak, that's the ruling. Rav Moshe Feinstein is saying, maybe not. Maybe when there's so many Rishonim on the other side, the Ramah was just saying that we like to be machmir, we prefer to be stringent just in case they're right. If that's just a stringent just in case, then when there's problematic situations, we have the right to say, but that's not the settled halacha. That's just what we've been trying to be stringent for. And therefore, when it comes to rabbinic prohibitions, if you have a suffix derabanan, if you have a questionable situation, and in derabanan, maybe you can be mekel. And he says, it's important to note that this derabanan is a straight up derabanan. Meaning sometimes you have a derabanan which is an extension of a deoraita situation, and there, if you have a suffix in the derabanan, it might be you feel the need to be machmir, to be stringent anyway, just like you would be in the original deoraita prohibition, because even though it's a derabanan prohibition, it's an extension of deoraita prohibition. So an example just to my mind that Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't bring up, maybe I'm getting it wrong, but an example would be, let's say, you know, you had a question about basar of bechalav, you had a question about bird meat in milk. So there you might say, even though I have a suffix, even though it's Rabbana, but it's Rabbana that is clear extension of a Doraita, and therefore I might have to treat it more stringently. But in the case of Chaticha Nasa Devela, that's a straight-up Rabbana. It's a straight-up idea that Rabbana said, we're going to treat this as if it all becomes Devela. And then he says, and I saw Darkei Tshuva, quotes a Ketav Sofer, a Shut Ketav Sofer, who says that if you make a Rabbanans, it's okay. And he says, maybe that's for the reason that I said, but I don't have a Ketav Sofer to check by me. And it's a reminder that Rav Moshe Feinstein worked with a much more limited library, I think, than many, many great people that we know. You know, the Ravad Yosef, Tzitz Eliezer, even our Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and managed to create whole worlds of halacha. I mean, to be very productive and accurate and authentic, even with a relatively limited library. He knew that library extremely well. With a relatively limited library, he functioned very, very well. So fundamentally, he's coming around to saying, he thinks that all of this allows us to say that since Tamienim is a Durabanan, right, and it's a Durabanan, and the Chaticha Nas Devela problem is Durabanan, he thinks there's room to be Mekel. But that, he says, is only if we know that the alcohol that we make the vinegar from is made from beets and other things like that, but we know it's not from wine, right? That the essential alcohol is not from wine. It's only the alcohol in the containers, the taste of alcohol in the containers that we have to worry about. So how do we know that? If we're not there being mashgiach over it, we know it from non-Jews. So Rav Moshe Feinstein now says another interesting, important halakhic principle idea. Nochri mesiach lefitim. Let's say you have a non-Jew who doesn't know what they're talking about. They're just giving you information and they don't know that the stakes that you apply to that information. So sometimes we're allowed to believe such people, sometimes we're not. So that's the question. So he says here, if he's just talking, and he's not meaning, if a nachri is trying to sell me something, if a nachri is trying to sell me something, and I say, well, I can't buy it unless X, and he says, oh no, for sure X, that's much harder to believe him about, because we know he has a stake in convincing me of the truth of that. But when a non-Jew doesn't know the stakes at hand, and is just talking, and just telling us information, so there we have the right to believe them in any more situations. And here in our situation, Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks that since Tam Yenam is a Derabanan, and we have no established prohibition here, right? The status of if chazik isura, if I know something's already prohibited, or have a reason to think it's prohibited, then the standards of making it non-prohibited are higher, and therefore maybe I wouldn't be allowed to believe a non-Jew, even Messiah Levitubo, but here we don't have that, and therefore it's fine, and you should be okay. Then he adds, even though we did a yesh lahatir, it's true that I think the halach is that I can find a way to say that this is mutter, but if you can get a mashgiach there, right, so the mashgiach, if you get a supervisor there who can see that the main alcohol that they're using, the vinegar, is coming from permissible items like the beets, what they think it is, or also you can make sure that they make it in better containers, even better, or to kosher the containers after they were used with the wine, to kosher them to get rid of the alcohol that's in them, so that would obviously be much, much better, and it would be much better to do it that way. So that is Rav Moshe Feinstein finding a heter for these people in France to be able to use the vinegar. You bring up many, many important and useful halakha concepts for us to know, and then reminding us at the end that nonetheless we should do our best always to do it to the highest standards, and if it's possible to do it in a way that's fully kosher and not have to rely on certain leniency, that would be even better. With thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, to David Hochhauser, this is a response of a day for the 4th of Iyar. Have a great day.